Okay, thank you. Well, thank you for giving me a chance to speak here. And yes, so today I would like to talk about some recent work on inflation with, well, these two papers, almost a year old now, and some work in progress with Jason Kumar and Arvind Rajamaran. And so the idea, well, like yesterday, I want to calculate correlation functions, but not this time, not an anti-de Sitter, but an actually somewhat de Sitter or close to de Sitter, really FRW. And I will look at much simpler operators, but to my defense, I don't have any supersymmetry, so I got to keep it simple. So really what I want to calculate is curvature perturbation, then curvature perturbations of, yeah, so zeta is going to be my curvature. I'm going to define this, define these things a lot more precise later on, but I just want to look at the two-point function for curvature perturbation in FRW background, essentially, so quasi-de Sitter. And this has been calculated already many times, but it was always essentially done at tree level, where just, you know, just some tree level contribution. And this has been, yeah, and then today I would like to consider what if you can go and calculate loops to these things, various loops that can come from interactions or even graviton loops of this type. So this is the main object I want to discuss and just look at the at these loop contributions. And well, the main motivation, I mean, this is actually quite messy to calculate these things, the techniques. I mean, it's not, it turns out it's not just Feynman diagrams that you need to use. It's a little bit more complicated because this is sort of like finite temperature field theory, so you should be using the in-in formalism, so-called, to calculate these things. So it can be very messy. Today, I just want to look at the order of magnitude of these terms and yeah, discuss whether they can ever be important or, and yeah, what kind of phenomenology can we get from these things. And the motivation is that we already have seen in our universe this part. Okay, so our universe is uniform, and but up to small, what we believe, small curvature perturbation, primordial curvature perturbations that are of order 10 to minus 9, okay, the two-point function. Okay, and this is essentially being measured by WMAP and COBE. And tomorrow at 6 a.m., we'll have Planck that's going to be launched. And so what's happening here is we're having ever more precision cosmology, ever more precise experiment measuring cosmology. And we are measuring ever more precisely all these perturbations in our universe. And so it's important to understand better perturbation theory around inflating background or just around FRW metric. So that's one of the motivations. So experimentally, we want to compute these things more precisely. And not only will I look at 2 points, also about mentioned recent, you know, works that have been done about non-Gaussianity where you calculate higher point function of these curvature perturbations. So this is one of the motivation to do this, just from experiment. Also, the other motivation is just purely on the theory side. And we want to just understand better correlation functions and correlation function. And again, I want to be always particular about de Sitter, really, maybe a quasi de Sitter or FRW metric, because I don't want to deal with the global structure, with the horizons and so forth. But just correlation function in you know, FRW or some patch of de Sitter, if you wish. Or FR, yeah. I don't know exactly, FRW universe. Right, and this could be useful for you know, eternal inflation, for the landscape, for maybe some holographic description of eternal inflation or NDS, CFT, and all sort of these things. It would be important to understand better these correlation functions.
I mean, you can't really ignore the horizon, like it looks stretched.
Right. No, but I mean, yeah, I just mean approximate. I mean, the you know, in de Sitter, there's a question whether you even have a legitimate quantum field theory, because you have, so you have horizon, there's a finite number, entropy, and so forth. And these are the things I don't want to deal with right now.
So you can have an exit from inflation and just talk about observables that you want.
That's fine. Okay. So historically, there's been a lot of work on this, and I think I can summarize. I mean, just here in this room, some people have worked on this, and back it was in 2002 when in transplanking physics, for example, Steve and Caliper and Albion, Lawrence, and missing somebody. No, I think I'm. and Matthew Kleban, where I had worked on this, estimating these, and there's been other group also working on estimating this, these correction to the two-point function. And what happens recently, there's been some more precise calculation of these things, of these loop contributions, starting with a paper by Weinberg and also Maldacenas and others, and trying to compute higher point function and loop more precisely. And so I just want to look at these more precise calculation and estimate the size. Okay, roughly this thing goes like some tree-level contribution times some one loop, and the one loop I'll just put it as a prefactor. So I'm calculating only to one loop in this, and I'm going to put some log of KL here, which is sort of the IR part of the loop integral, and then I have some UV part, which is usually going to be just a number, but it's going to be regularization dependent. And then you get some log piece here, and L here is my R cutoff. Okay. Now, it's not always a log, because you could have runnings in the loop. So if it's running, it's actually going to be some kind of power law. But on CMB scale, since we know there's not much running, this is going to be well approximated by log dependence. Okay. So in this talk, I want to, so there's a lot of issues here, and there's been a lot of papers about estimating exactly. So first of all, what cutoff should you be using? And a lot of issues with the IR divergences. First, I probably won't have time to really go too much into this, and also I have to say that part of it is still, that's the part which is still work in progress. There's some cases where it's really clear what L is, but I don't think I have yet the complete picture of what it is. Yeah, so in some cases it's...
You wouldn't expect to have to put that in by hand as a cutoff, right?
You mean the Abel size?
Yeah.
No, that's right. So in some cases the L is of order 1 over the size of the universe, essentially today. Okay. Which means that if you take K to be CMB scale, then this log is of order 5, about.
No, the private point is you can choose, right? You can make, there's a consistent way to make a different choice so that it's not like K sugars.
That's right. Well, so the correct statement, and again, this is, I don't want to go too much into this, but the correct statement is, yes, there's a higher cutoff. It is somewhat, you choose it, but the point is you're measuring, when you measure your two-point function, you're determining what the zero mode is, right? The background value of, say, your perturbation. So you're measuring perturbation around a background value, some zero mode. And that zero mode is going to be average on some scale. And so that's the argument, one of the arguments in this whole story is that the scale in which you average your background value is the same scale as which will appear in your loops. Which, since we measure it on this kind of scale, for today, we're measuring the size of the universe today, so that gives you some higher cutoff.
So there are physical situations where the log is big?
The situation in which I do understand are the case where I can really make the argument that the cutoff should be just the size of the universe today. In this case, this log is of order 5, which actually I wouldn't count as big.
Well, we waited a while, it might be big.
Yeah, it will grow. Yeah, if you were to wait.
And also, say the tree level should.
Yeah, exactly. But if you wait, let's say, and the universe grows, so this log becomes big. But then also, we've seen new modes coming in our horizon, and the tree level is going to change. So that the claim is that the change in the cutoff here is going to be. Is embedded in this thing, because what we're doing here really is this is coming from an inflaton, which is a perturbation around some background value. Phi of x and t around some background value. And the determination of this, what is the zero mode in our universe, depends on the size of the universe. If I look at a very small patch, I might see an overdense region, in which case this would, if I look on the at the size of the Earth, I see a very overdense region. If I measure the curvature perturbation here in this room, I'll get this as a different number than 10⁻¹. And also then, but the cutoff should then be changed accordingly in your loops. That's one of the statements.
So this A in the contributions is the slope of this vector, and it's the best?
Yes, it will be.
And it's additional to the one that we usually talk about, which is from the shape of the polygon.
That's right. This is not included in the... usually loops are not being included because this prefactor is very small in most cases. That's right. So this is a huge. This is one of the things that that's constrained loops is that there is a log k dependence. This is a huge contribution to the running because it's essentially order 1 because the running is derivative with respect to log k. So this is an order one contribution to the running. And so therefore, there's a good chance that I would say that this might be visible first in the running instead of actual in the value.
Sorry, just a question. In slow roll, you know, 5 to the 4th or something, A would be like 10 to the minus 14 or? What's the magnitude?
But that's the whole point of my talk. So today I will not talk too much about the IR part. I will discuss what is the magnitude of this guy. And I will only discuss it in special cases. It's been done, like I said before, I'll just look in some special cases. And one other thing I want to look at also is it ever possible to reach a point where the system is strongly coupled, in which case the loop expansion is no longer valid. Okay. This is a perturbation, curvature perturbation on a scale k. K is the momentum, and there's a delta function in this expression. There's two perturbations, they have to have the same momentum. That's the momentum, so that's the scale. For a CMB scale, this is 0.0. It's usually given in megaparsec inverse, but anyway, yeah. It's some scale, some size. All right. Right, so the question is when does we want to know, can these things ever be big? That's always a question. Can they, what's the overall magnitude or even sign or other things? And so what I'll do, so this was my intro, I'll then discuss just some examples where I just want to be specific. And so just look at very specific models where, and just try to estimate the size of these things. And calculate the back reaction and the perturbative bounds, which means by that when does the perturbative regime breaks, or when does the perturbations, the back reaction from the perturbations become important. And then I'll discuss some work in progress where we seem to find a system, time permitting, I'll discuss some work in progress where we have a system where the tree point could be, the dominant part of the tree point could be a loop diagram. For the 2-point, the loops always are small, but for the 3-point, it might be possible in a very somewhat constrained model. All right. Okay. So this was, I'm going to explain this. So I have lost some people already because, I'll go back and explain this in more detail. So what I'm looking at is this, I have an action for some metric. And so I'm going to look at inflation. So these curvature perturbations, we have good evidence for them. And the most appealing at this moment model to get these things is inflation. So I'm just going to look at a system inflation with scalar fields. So I'm going to have some number of scalar fields and the metric. And I want to look at a solution, which is close, which is of the FRW type, where I have an Hubble scale. So this is just quick review, which is just set by and I assume there's some positive energy density, rho greater than 0, which will drive the inflationary error and some Hubble scale given by the usual Friedman equation. So this is obeyed today. So in order to have inflation, we need that we need an accelerated expansion. So a dot dot over a should be greater than 0. Which, from Einstein's equation or continuity equation, is proportional to this factor 1 minus epsilon, where epsilon is greater, is minus h dot over h squared. Just checking my sign here. So this is defined like this. Okay. So I'm going to inflate as long as epsilon is less than 1, in which case this is positive and greater than 0. Okay. So I need this to be less than 1. So this is the only two parameters I'm going to have. So this is, and this dot h square, you can make it dimensionless, say, divided by m square, m Planck squared, and epsilon, or by divided by some scale. Okay. In order to have a sustained period of inflation, we usually have an extra parameter, or even many other parameters, like eta, eta parameter, which is usually defined this way. Which also needs to be small. Here, I don't. And then there's a whole industry in string theory to try to get an effective action of this, for which we have the slow roll parameter in a controllable regime and get a sustained period of inflation. So this guy being less than 1 is usually a requisite to get enough inflation. This is just necessary to get inflation at all. Okay. So I'm only going to be looking at these two parameters mostly, and I'll introduce another one also this later on. But. And so then the idea is we just perturb around this background. So we look at perturbation, phi goes as some background value, as a function of time. So we're looking at time-dependent solution, or time-dependent solution, plus some perturbation. And I'll perturb the metric the same way. Zero. In fact, the metric, let me just be more precise. I'm going to normally, a nice way to parameterize these perturbations So I'm perturbing around the metric. I have the curvature perturbation. So this is the definition here. So it's the curvature on a three-dimensional hypersurface. And these are the tensor modes, essentially the graviton. Okay. It seems I have 3 degrees of freedom here. Well, even more. But that's essentially because I have broken time different variants. I can choose a gauge where I say this is equal to zero. And then I have legitimate gravity with 3 degrees of freedom. I can also choose a unitary gauge, in which case I have delta phi, and I have only 2 degrees of freedom. So in this talk, I will consistently put these guys to zero, just to simplify. But really, they are couplings. The tensor modes and the scalar mode couples. Okay, so this is a scalar curvature. Okay, and so then the idea is that I can then just write an effective theory, or just expand this action. So if I know this action to whatever order you want, I can just expand in the perturbation and then write some background value, the linear order and the expansion and the perturbations, second order and then interaction term. Okay. And then this guy is just going to be some number. This is just a background because it's just going to be your background solution. Well, they're all really numbers, but I mean, so what I mean here is that it's just going to be some, in the integral before x, I just get some, say, for example, the potential evaluated on the background. Then this one will vanish because of the equation of motions, and then you're going to get your free field here for delta phi for your perturbations and then interaction terms. Okay, so to estimate the size of the loop, you only really need to look at these interaction terms the same way you would estimate the size of non-Gaussianity or other higher point correlation function. Okay, so some comment about something to mention is that you're breaking time deformorphism invariants, and so you will get like I said, you have 3 degrees of freedom gravity if you wish, but also you're going to have the coupling constant and your theory are going to be time dependent. Okay, so it's slightly unusual. But. Okay. So to be more precise and evaluate this loop, I'm going to look at two systems. And to get something interesting, I'm going to generalize the slow roll to the case of small sound speed. So let me define what it is. I'm going to look at an action, which is given by just m Planck square r plus. Okay. Probably should just put the square root of g. Okay. So this is an action that shows up in some string theory model, whenever. I mean, so x here, I should say, so this again. A general, just a kinetic term. And then, then you have phi. And I think that's pretty much it here. Can define the sound speed is defined as px. Okay? And so this is the type of action you get, for example, in dBi inflation, or you can get also in this is also, if I take CS equal to 1, this is just going to be slow roll inflation. This is going to be of the form x plus some potential v of phi. OK, and this is the usual slow roll canonical kinetic term. This is the case CS equal 1. Okay, so that, I'm just doing this just because I want to keep track of CS to see how it comes in the loop. But if you take CS equal to 1, you should just recover a slow roll. Okay. Thank you. Right, and then so here I want to keep track of CS, or I can do CS equal 1 to keep track of slow roll parameter. And then the other system is I'm just going to consider n fields, which non-interacting to simplify the story, in which case the action is just, and I'm going to take in this case that the sound speed is always 1. This is what you see in inflation or axion inflation when you have multiple fields that have very weak coupling between them. Okay.
In the first case, if CS is much less than 1, do you change your infrared cutoff then? Because the sound horizon is different. Does that enter in some important way?
I don't think so, because I think the infrared cutoff is really not determined in this case by how you calculate this guy, but how you evaluate your background value. So. I don't think so. Any other questions? So this is the setup. So then I'm just going to take these two systems and estimate the size of the loops in both cases. Okay?
The constant load in the solution dominates after you cross the sound horizon.
That's right.
Do you think that would come into the loop calculation?
It does come in here. I just don't think it will come in the hour cutoff here.
Okay, so you're going
to
explain where that comes from, I guess.
The A? Yeah. Well, part.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I will. Okay, so for example, let's look at the perturbation theory for the single field case, because we can be very explicit in this model. So note that while the main assumption here is I'm not including higher derivative term for Einstein, but this guy is pretty general and can include a relevant operator or operators that are suppressed by some UV scale. But I am not including like R square or other corrections here. And so so I'm not considering all possible loops because of this. But also I'm putting consistently the tensors to zero. So I'm going to get a set of loop diagram, but not necessarily all of them. Or set of terms. All right, so I can then just expand the action, like I said, to find what S, the background value is, and what the free fields and the perturbations are. Let me just give it to you for the first case. So single field with CS general. And I'm going to use a gauge, a co-moving gauge, where delta phi is 0. And then my degrees of freedom is just Z, curvature perturbation. Okay, so that is, I'm choosing a time slicing such that I'm always on each time slice, delta phi is essentially equal to 0. Then the action looks like S0 is just A cube, essentially A square and Planck square. Okay, because it's the potential, and by my Freeman equation, a rho or equal to pressure here. Okay, so roughly, up to numerical factor, this is the background value. Okay, so I'm inflating, I have some positive energy. This is my cosmological constant. Okay. S1 is 0 because of the equation of motion, and S2 is a free field equation, which just looked like so this is the kinetic term for zeta. Note that there's no mass term. I should say zeta essentially is dimension. Doesn't have any mass dimension, just from its definition and the action. Okay. So, but there's an M Planck square. Okay. So this is coming just from expanding Einstein's action, and so you just get derivative coupling. So at this level, there's a shift symmetry actually for zeta, but it's going to be broken right now. Which is, and here there's many terms, and this is actually turns out to be a non-trivial computation to go from to expand the action and just compute the third order, but it's been done, and the answer is plus many terms. I'm just going to show one term just to get a flavor of what these interaction terms looks like. And I'm keeping CS general, but if you put CS equal to 1, you recover the slow roll case. And you get the epsilon squared term, which is that term was first calculated by Acquaviva, Bartolo, Martorese, and somebody else. And then Malacena did also. And Rioto. Thank you. All right, so yeah, so these terms have been computed before. I'm sorry, I'm in the board like this. I probably will not cite. Obviously, everybody else should be citing. And then there's S4, which is pretty messy. So you can estimate, so the usual procedure is we just neglect these terms, use this to compute the 2-point, the tree level. So you just calculate the 2-point using this guy. And you just so when you just solve the equation of motion for this for the mode, ZK. And then you quantize, and then you evaluate the correction function. And at the 2-point, there's no mess about in formalism versus quantum field theory. You just, you know, it's pretty simple. And you get the standard result. So you get a 2-point function, k cubed, where p zeta, the dimensionless power spectrum, is okay, so I'm just really quoting here. I have assumed also the Bunge-Davies vacuum for when I solve this the mode equation here. So I've assumed that it recovers Minkowski and the large K limit. And this is, okay. Right. So this is the power, the dimensionless power spectrum at 2-point for this model. Okay. And it's slow roll. You just for slow roll, just put CS equal to 1, and this is the usual H squared of epsilon. Okay. You can also just to remind you, I can switch to delta phi by doing a gauge transformation. That gauge transformation at first order is just given by the following. So you multiply by phi dot over h, which is a time-dependent coupling, but really it's just your phi. These are all given by the background solution. And you find p phi so up to that little factor that's coming from the case where you have a non-canonical term, you recognize this is just a usual statement that perturbation of a scalar field and a FRW or the center background has perturbation of order h over 2 pi. Okay, so then the idea is that, okay, so this one way to estimate the size of the loop is to say, well, we know that these guys on a time step, delta t of order 1 over h, the field zeta will pick up a variance of, or will have a value of order of this guy, essentially, which is just the square root of p zeta. And this is going to, on a step of this, and this is on size. And then you have to be just a little bit careful, this is related to the question of Shamit, about the sound horizon, that the size and also the fact that you need to use a co-moving coordinate. So you have a Hubble scale, it's not just 1 over h, it has 1 over ah. And there's a factor of CS because the perturbations are seeing a smaller horizon. Okay. So over a time step over the Hubble scale and over a distances over of this scale, zeta will have fluctuation of this order. Okay. Right, so then you can estimate this. So first thing one thing we should check is that the perturbation theory is valid. Is we should check and make sure that the energy and these perturbation is smaller than the cosmological constant and the background solution. Okay, so you should make sure that this, the pressure or the density, the energy density of these guys is smaller than this quantity. And then you should make sure also that the loop, which is going to be roughly the size of these terms, is going to be smaller compared to the 2-point. Okay, so if you do that, if you demand that, if you just demand the sample bonds, you get some interesting. So let me write some bounds. Okay, so what I'm doing here is I'm going to do it just a table, and I'm going to do different case. Okay, so I'm going to do a slow roll where CS equal 1. I'm going to do CS very smaller than 1, and I'm going to do large numbers of field, which I didn't write, but you can also write the expansion for this large number of fields. And large number of fields, I mean when they're not interacting, for simplicity. Okay. And then the question is, we want a back reaction to be small.
And with the large number of fields, how are you picking a gauge? The delta phi equals zero gauge, it doesn't.
No, that's right. I'm actually with the large number of field. I just expand it. I keep all the delta phi's and I just look at the terms for yeah. So I would write a theory which has I would write the delta phi action instead of the zeta action because it's kind of confusing with the zeta with the gauges. But still, you can estimate the size of the term. You're just going to have yeah. In terms of delta phi, you get some kinetic term delta phi square, and then you just have n of them. So you can get just some, and the only thing I want to keep track is the factors of n to see how kind of an enhancement you get when you have many fields. But again, this is a simple, if there is a real O-N symmetry, I can redefine a single field and the n should disappear in my loop as I think it's been shown as I will give you. Yeah, so let me just, I'll just give you the order of the size of the loops. And I quote some calculation, precise calculation, and you see that essentially they all agree.
So
well, not precisely, but I keep it in mind. No, I mean I. So there's another.
I think it is a separate issue.
Yeah.
Well, but it changes the end scaling. If you're not careful, you'll find end scaling.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's the thing is there's two loops here also. There's just like loop corrections to the original action that I've written. It's really an effective action, and I should calculate loop corrections to that. And then here is this loop correction to the correlation function, which I'm calculating.
So. Assuming you have this self-consistent background.
Yeah, exactly, assuming that. And then, perturbative bounds, that is the size of, this is going to be the size of S3 compared to the two-point. So I'm comparing S3, so the third-order action, the size of these terms compared to the two-point. So I'm essentially just quoting S3 over S2, essentially. And here, this is S2 over S0. So I compare the size of S2 compared to S0. And I will demand that this is always, that this the perturbations are small compared to the background, and the three-points are small compared to the two-point.
Okay.
At the CMB scale, you can show very clearly that CMB is telling you that this is smaller than this. Yeah. But also, one of the interesting things is to go in coming with the precision cosmology is we eventually will be able to see other things than the CMB. And we'll see like large scale structure where they could be, or other smaller scale, where maybe actually the system could potentially be strongly coupled or at least have stronger interactions. But it's true that the CMB, I should mention, the CMB is a really tells us that the two-point, that the fact that it's a very Gaussian is telling us that this is very small. I can quantify this, at least in some cases. Right, and so then I'll just compare to recent precise calculations of the loop. By precise, I mean actually computing all these diagrams. So, okay, so the back reaction, okay, so demanding in slow roll, just demanding that this is smaller than this is just the same as demanding that H is less than M Planck, which is pretty trivial. So in slow roll, the perturbations are always small. And for the three-point, turns out that the sound speed, because you have a smaller horizon, perturbations are actually, the gradient energy is higher because they're over a smaller scale. So actually, if CS is much less than 1, you will have a back reaction on the inflationary background at smaller H, okay, at smaller energies, okay, where CS is much less than 1. And for a large N, then each field is giving you a perturbation. All the energy of these fields adds up. And so if you have too many fields, you will have a large back reaction again. Okay. So what I'm doing here is I'm just estimating the size of these term using the solution here. And I haven't written, this is only for single field. So this action only really works for these two cases. I'm just giving you the result for this one. Okay. So these bounds are somewhat trivial, although note that this one is just the same as And value is black hole bound on the number of field, which can be derived from entropy and can be derived 16 different ways. But it's just, you know, there's a bound here on the number of fields. Coming, and I'm just saying this bound is just coming from back reaction. Wow, I guess it will be the reduced one. I put my pi.
No, I'm not talking about that.
Oh, the factors of n? Well, no, so that's the thing. So, no, that's right. I think you should include, yeah, so for, you should include, what you're saying is there should be a loop correction here coming from R squared. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so for large n, it will change the answer, I think, probably. Yeah, but no, yeah, this is an interesting question. I'm not sure exactly. I mean, I'm really taking the tree-level action. I'm not, and then in calculating just how many fields can I have here before I'm having a perturbation to this. But you're right that there will be loop corrections also.
That n term, that's a UV effect. So, I mean, it's the effective IR value of MP that appears. You can think of it that way, or the relation to the block mass by.
Yeah, I think
something's happening at the plot scale, right? It's not.
Right. These are light fields, yes. This is important that all the fields are fluctuating. And
so you say this is even that, it's not the UV.
Yeah, I know that the M Planck does get renormalized, or you know, just you get a correction because the number of fields.
Renormalized suggests running. It's not actually running. It has some effective value at all scales below the Planck scale. Is that? Does it run in the? Doesn't run in the RG sense.
No. Yeah. I guess not. Yeah. Right. No. Yeah. So in this sense, it should be valid here because I am at energies way below M Planck.
The effective value runs.
Yeah. Exactly. That's right. Which you said.
Yeah. I mean, both make sense if you have a UV theory, where you could compute the 4D M Planck and it had n species. The natural scaling would be to say M Planck squared scales with n.
Okay.
So if you take a limit of large n with M Planck fixed, you're doing something unnatural.
Right. Okay. Okay, and so and then the perturbative bound. So if you just look at the tree point and in slow roll, you get the.
With low sound speed, you're forced to lower scale inflation in order.
Yeah. That's right. So if your arbol scale, if CS is really small and your arbol scale say. So, you know, it's 10 to the 16 GV. So
that almost seems like a, is that a direct proof that you can never get
a tensor
moves out of?
I see your question. I think still, well, I mean, it depends how small is your sound speed. At some point, if your sound speed is really, really small, then yes, your tensor mode, which are going to be only proportional to H squared over N Planck square. But you're going to get other problems before getting to that to this very low sound speed. You're going to get the sound speed. I'm going to write the bound. The perturbative bound is stronger than this one, so you will violate your system is going to be strongly coupled before you have a large back reaction.
Okay, good. So I'm putting a number of other examples.
That's right.
Getting about the top down.
Exactly. Yeah, well, yeah, but if you were forgetting about the strongly coupled and you take CS really, really small, then yes, at some point your tensor will have. Yeah. I think you can see this body from the consistency relation NT that there is a sound speed there. So if you really tune down sound speed very small, keeping everything else the same, the tensor modes are going to go down. That's right. All right, so for a slow roll, you get this bound. This is just from this. I'm taking CS equal to 1, and so I get an action, a term in the action, which is proportional to epsilon square over CS square. And when you demand that this term is smaller than these terms, then you get this bound. Okay? Which is weaker than this one, because epsilon is less than 1. Okay? So I can say right away one of the main points, at least in slow roll, that you will never have a strongly coupled regime in slow roll because you will have a large back reaction before you become strongly coupled. And so what's going to happen is, and if you have a large back reaction, then you should doubt your inflationary solution. And so in this case, you might stop inflating before you reach the strongly coupled regime. For these guys, you get this bounce, which has been derived by other people's Chong and all, and the effective field theory, and it's so essentially this is saying P that's. Yeah, they have this quantity, so there's some epsilon here, and this is the power spectrum for the curvature. It has to be less than CS to the 4. This is, like I said, is actually a stronger bound than this one. And you can violate this while still having a perfectly valid inflationary solution. So in other words, in this kind of models, this is the kind of model where I'm including all these UV traction possibly here, like DBI inflation. And I have an example where this is you can hit a regime of strongly coupled, where you're strongly coupled, but you're still inflating. So you don't know, you cannot use perturbation theory to compute your correlation functions, but you still have an inflationary solution. Okay. And for large N, you get really the large N here is it's just like N spiral, pretty much, but with a factors of N.
For the real world, the non-Gaussianity bound is probably strong enough to anyway bound CS?
On CMB scale, that's right. CMB scale is telling us that the physics at the bound of non-Gaussianity from CMB is telling us the physics is weakly coupled and not strongly coupled. But still, you want to see, well, these loops can be observable, even though they have to be small. Right. So I should say that this actually is not the correct answer for slow roll, because there is a term at fourth order, which is bigger. And then it's been shown and argued that there's no other term. So actually, for slow roll, there's a term at fourth order which has one less power of epsilon, and so it actually will be. So in other words, the diagram that this diagram is a diagram where you have a one loop contribution where you use the 3-point interaction, but the diagram with a 4-point is actually bigger. And for slow roll, this one, the 3 points and the 4 points are about the same order, and for this one is also the same thing. Okay. So explicit calculation of these loops have been done in all these systems. And so just to quote the result, yes. So Siri and Slot here have calculated for single field inflation and slow roll the loop contribution, and they found that it is the order h squared over m x squared, the dominant diagram. This Bartolo and this Mastro Giovanni found that the tensor contribution is also the same order. So it's h squared over m x squared. It's pretty small, very small. This is. These guys, this is actually just a paper like last week, which indeed found that the loop was going like this, essentially by Gao and Su. Okay. So the loop indeed goes, the loop diagonal contribution go like this, although I have to say that I had to do some assumption to take their result and put it in terms of what I want, which is zeta square, but it seems like this is going to be the size of the loop. Okay, this is very recent. And this is the original loop calculation of Weinberg in 2006. He got this one, which is actually because he was looking at the penguin diagram, that type of diagram. But actually, it's been shown that this one is, you can get contribution like this by Adchen, Easter, and Nim. And it also been shown in this that I'm just estimating the size of the terms, just as in normal quantum field theory, you can get it wrong because you can have cancellations if there's some hidden symmetries. So in particular, if there's an O-N symmetry that tells me that between this N field, such that really it's a single field, then the diagrams actually all cancels out and the answer is actually just H squared of M x squared. And this was shown in this paper that indeed, if there's an O-N symmetry, you explicitly calculate these things, the answer you get is just this. So of course, when these bounds are just the order of magnitude, if there's some hidden symmetries, then it will be smaller. There might be some cancellation. All right. Well. So yeah. So this is just very interesting. This one can have a strongly coupled regime. As was pointed out, though, CMB scale is telling us that it's not strongly coupled. It's weakly coupled, at least on CMB scale. But it's still interesting, I think, of theoretical interest, that you could have a background which is inflating, but perturbation around that background are strongly coupled. But, and also, it's just that if CRS varies with scale, so that, you know, you're measuring on CMB scale, and indeed, you found that CS, we have a bound on CS, essentially, because the non-Gaussianity goes 1 over CS squared, and that's less than 10 to the 2. That means CS to the 4 is less than 10 to the minus 4. Okay? And this bound is telling me that CS to the 4, in order to be in the, this is to be weakly coupled, I need CS to the 4 to be greater. This should be greater, right? Right. So this is from experiment. CS to the 4 is greater than 10 to the minus 4 from CMB, on CMB scale. And this theory is going to become strongly coupled only when CS to the 4 is greater than this, which has been measured to be 10 to the minus 9. So there's 5 order of magnitude here. So we are very weakly coupled by 5 order of magnitude. Okay. But if CS varies, then it could be that you hit the strongly coupled regime and then you stop inflating later on. So it's still possible to have, okay, versus it's not possible in slow.
You'd have to run very quickly with scale, though, right?
To be observable, because we can observe is like right here, but you don't have to run very quickly because there's like 60 e-folds, so you can still like 45 e-folds and be strongly coupled. It's just not really observable because we only.
Delta C over C would have to be big, but it could change slowly.
Yeah, I mean, this is not so unexpected in these mechanisms where you have small CS, the interactions can grow with time.
Yeah, no, totally.
That's actually a limiting factor in some of the modeling and stuff.
That's right. So what you're saying, what Steve is mentioning is that, this is not just making it up, but actually most models, CS varies, and the DBI, for example. Yeah. But the question of whether it varies fast enough is to be. But this is actually not another constraint in trying to get, say, DBI inflation in string theory, because often it's, you know, you will find that it gets strongly coupled. All right. So you can calculate these loops. These are the size and.
Can we use smaller scale structure to constrain, wild variations of CS? I mean.
The wild variation.
I just mean it happens very nonlinear.
I wouldn't be the best person to answer this, but.
I think you can. I think it's better on cluster scales. It's probably also not like that, but below
that, you have to do black holes or something. Yeah. All right. So these kind of models are interesting because, you can get a strongly coupled regime, and then you can start asking questions. This might be interesting if you have some kind of holographic description of these things. Oh, and one thing in passing, eternal inflation, just a quick word about eternal inflation. Eternal inflation is essentially occurs when the perturbations are of order 1. Okay, and you can see this stochastic eternal inflation. Not tunneling. So stochastic is when you're on your potential and your quantum perturbation are of the same order as the classical movement. Okay, the speed, which is delta phi dot or I think over 8 or something. Well, just we call it delta phi classical, which is related to the velocity. And it turns out that these two are exactly of the same order when the curvature perturbation is of order 1. Okay. You can see that in the small CS sound speed, when this is of order 1, obviously P zeta is of order 1, because this is just zeta square. And if this guy is of order 1, then you will always, in these models, be outside of the perturbative regime. Okay. So these guys do not allow you to have stochastic eternal inflation in the perturbative regime. Slow roll, on the other hand, because this is kind of, you first think that when you do your perturbation theory, you think that this is your expansion parameter, because this is the thing you're expanding out in. So you expect that when zeta is order 1, your perturbation theory is going to break down. But this is true for small CS, but for slow roll, it turns out that P zeta, just from this bound here, has to be less than 1 over epsilon. And so it actually can be of order 1 and bigger. So slow stochastic eternal inflation is perturbative locally for slow roll, but not for small sound speed. And this is an interesting question, whether stochastic eternal inflation can be achieved in string theory, because I believe this is harder to get than even than tensor modes, and which we know requires a large range. Of course, tunneling eternal inflation is, you know, the landscape. So that might very well be occurring. All right, so let me just conclude then by the last section, where I will just go quickly. So this is the overall size, and then, like I said, there's a lot of discussion about this, the log, explicitly what is the cutoff you should be using, and whether you can get a large factor from the log. Okay, and that could enhance, because all these numbers are very small. And so at this level, it looks like the loops are all very small, unless you go at least on CMB scale. This one is one case where it's bigger, because you have these UV interaction term, essentially. But it might be possible that the three-point function, on the other hand, could be dominated by loops. Okay, and the reason, so the two-point, there's an obvious limitation coming from this log, that when I measure this, the ns minus 1, which is the running, this is a order, it's going to be a order 1 contribution. So you will get something like 1 plus, you get A over 1 plus A. And so A has to be small, you know, because we know this is a order 10 to minus 2. So right there, there's a, you know, there's a contribution. We know for experimentally that this thing has to be small. And also, I mean, if this is big, then you might, a perturbative regime might break down, then you should, you know, you might not be able to calculate these things. So this is $3. But for the three-point, I could easily have something that goes like that, because the running there is completely unconstrained. And I could have something where, and also the three-level contribution from the amphiton is very small, so order epsilon. So if normal slow roll models have a very, the three-level contribution, to say delta phi cube or from slow roll times some, sorry. So the zeta cube is going to be, let me write zeta again as proportional to delta phi. So this is delta phi cube and plus potentially other contribution. Okay. But that contribution from delta phi, where phi is the amphiton, and slow rho is very small. So order ns minus 1 again, actually. So it's a very small contribution. So you might hope that higher interactions might actually be the dominant contribution to this. Yes?
At the beginning, you dropped the perturbation in the metric that was sort of the tensor mode.
That's right.
And in the non-Gaussianity, that actually sort of, I mean, the metric perturbation dominates. So if you've dropped that, how do you know you're keeping the dominant loop correction also?
So you mean in this calculation here that the tensor modes?
Yeah, I mean the piece that you dropped in the expansion of the metric.
That's right, the tensor modes. Yeah.
Actually dominates, right?
To the non-Gaussianity, I think it's of the same order in slow roll.
Actually dominates.
But I think it's okay because that's we included that term when we estimated. So that term is also from expanding root G, mm-hmm. right? Because it's delta phi, delta phi, delta phi. And so I think you still have that in your
I mean, it's still order ns minus 1.
The answer is still order ns minus 1.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You really did just delta phi.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay, so the way that we could potentially get something that where the loop dominates is to, so when if you have more than one field, in general, the curvature perturbation will be some expansion in terms of these fields. And so you will get something like this, plus say beta 1 delta chi. Okay, so you get two contributions if you have a multiple field model, both of which the fluctuation will be transferring to some curvature perturbation. Okay. And you can get this relation, this is to linear order. In general, you can get higher interactions. Okay. And these are essentially going to give you loop diagram again. So this is really sort of a nonlinear.
What I'm doing is
I'm calculating delta phi tree level, but then I say there's a nonlinear when I do a gauge transformation back into curvature. It's a gauge transformation for one field. For two fields, it's really it's a delta n from Alzim. So it's just there, you have a relation. This is what we measure, and this is the fields here. And this could be nonlinear. So this is a convolution here. So if this is for mode k, but this is evaluated at the same position in space. So this is a convolution. So these kind of interaction term will give rise to loop. Okay. Loop diagram, when you calculate zeta square, you will get, for example, a delta phi square, which is your tree level, times some your coefficient. But you also get a contribution, for example, delta phi to the 4, which is essentially a loop like this. Okay, so these are loop diagram as well. And this expansion is possible, first of all, to truncate. It turns out that these coefficients are somewhat independent. Okay. They really depend on your model, and you can really truncate to zero. And so you can really say, like, say beta tree equal to zero, and others beta n are zero to a higher order. So you can truncate the series. So you will have a one loop, but you wouldn't have necessarily a two loop or other things like this. And then you can also just demand that, for example, work in a regime, and you can come up with a model like this, which essentially we sort of alluded to in this paper, where you have model where you have, this is the dominant contribution, this is your amphiton, but there's some new fields whose dominant contribution is not a linear piece, but a quadratic piece. So you can make this term more important than this one, just by tuning these functions, which are independent. Okay, and then what you in these kind of models you would get for the 2 point, you would get delta phi square plus delta chi to the 4, and you can say, well, this has to be smaller than this, so this is a one loop here, and this is a two loop. This is a tree level. This is a one loop for this field chi, and then this has to be tuned to be smaller than this, because n is minus 1 puts you a constraint. But then when you calculate the 3 point. This is the 3 point coming from this guy is very small, and the dominant piece is a loop effect. And that's what's nice, so you get something like delta chi to the 6, which I still don't quite know how to draw, and I think it's something like this. Right, sort of, yeah.
That just goes a contribution to the
But right, that's right. It would be there will be there is usually a term. The one without loops is this times this, or this times this square.
No, not
because of the IR, just because I choose a coefficient. Because you get two terms. You get the term, and this is the formula of light. They calculate this in full generality. You get a term which is beta 1 times square times beta 2. Which is, so you take this cube, so you get this term square times this, and this is not a one loop diagram, this is just a normal curvature model. But you get also a square term, sorry, which is beta 2 cube. Just this term cube. And depending on what these functions are, it is possible to find regional parameter space where the loop contribution dominates.
For beta 1 to be 0, it means somehow the curvaton is not directly turning into curvature perturbation. It has to go through some complicated process to do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really putting it to 0. I don't think I know how to put it to 0, but I can put it smaller than the other one. Yeah. But yeah, it's not just I think the usual curvaton model is not going to satisfy the condition I'm showing here. Yeah, I can. I'm running out of time, but you can work out an explicit model where it's really simple to see how this function could be bigger than this one in such a way that this contribution just dominates over the usual curvaton tree level contribution. And then what happens is you have a nice loop dominated spectrum, but it's also I think the main phenomenological feature, and again this is a work in progress, but I think the thing we're found right now is that there's a strong scale dependence, right, because of this log. So this is a really large running on FNL. So this is a local non-Gaussianity, let me summarize.
Before you raise a question?
Yep.
A, the parameter A. What is it? Is it in this table? Is it a different row?
So this is A. Putting everything on the side, on the left hand side, I'm saying A has to be less than 1.
Okay, so that second row is what you call this.
Yeah. Well, also this one. This is what I estimated, and this is what people have calculated. So this is A.
Oh, it's the contributions there. Okay.
That's right. Taking this one is not the dominant. This one is.
So it's lower row, epsilon times H over epsilon squared.
And sorry, it's lower row?
You're saying you move the epsilon over to the left? So it's A.
Well, yeah, but there's actually a there's a contribution which is bigger. It's just this one.
But that's dominated. I mean, that's determined by gravity waves to be 10 to the minus 10 or something.
That's right. So in slow roll, yeah, actually, I should mean it. Yeah, this number is 10 to the minus 10. And so this number here is 10 to the minus 10, yeah, plus 1. So the log, even if there is some kind of the cutoff, which I didn't put here, even if it was really, really big in slow roll, you need quite big for this to be. But so, yeah. But this guy could potentially be bigger. But yeah, slow roll is really very Gaussian. Okay. And right. So actually, let me not erase this. So let me summarize this. So you can have the loop dominate the bispectrum in a model which I didn't describe, but in principle, it could be that the loop dominate the tree point. So yeah, loop can dominate ZQ. In principle, particularly, there's no constraint experimentally that tells us that it doesn't. And the signature of this is a very strong running of this parameter F and L, which, in particular, for the case we calculated, we found that this is a curvaton-type model, so the shape is the local shape, which is what you get also in slow roll. And usually when you get this local shape for F and L, it's also scale-independent. So it's to have something that's scale-dependent and strongly scale-dependent with the local shape is actually new. Okay, I don't know any other model where the shape, I should say, the shape is local. Yeah. Do you know it? They have a local shape?
It has a right to support a local shape because that is
okay.
The overall NS is small, then it's close to 1, but locally it can vary far away from that. And you build up a resonant non Gaussianity and also.
Right.
That is, it has support a local shape and it's K dependent.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, okay, I know this, okay. Right, well, that would be, not a good example. Here I have, it's really just like a number. It's 1 over log k, really, is what you get, because this is really d log f and l, or 1 over f and l. This is the usual definition for the running. And so, like I told you before, there's a good reason to think that this number is of order 5. And so this is actually running order 0.2. It's pretty big. This is NG. Okay. And this, if the tree point is dominated by loop, and these loop have these logs coming from higher effects, then this is roughly what I expect. The 0.2 is dependent on that higher cutoff choice, which really should be fixed. And this is work in progress. This is why essentially exactly what is this L. Right, and so what else? Just concluding. So that's one of the main conclusions. You can have loop, then if they dominate, you get the large running of, and this could be observable potentially. And also you can get that inflation. You can get an inflation which is strongly coupled, but still inflating. Okay. So this is just interesting, I think, more for theoretical reason, and maybe if you study the landscape using at least stochastic inflation, you might be interested when these models become strongly coupled, whether you are really internally inflating or not. And then the R, so the obvious work in progress, and questions, which is to really completely settle this issue about what exactly is the cutoff. Okay, and at least in this model, we have very good evidence that the cutoff should be close to. You choose it, but you choose it by when you determine what the background value of the field is. So what you measure, what you're measuring your perturbation against. Okay, so if you're measuring your perturbation and you choose a box the size of the universe, then that chooses what your cutoff is. Okay, if you measure the perturbation around the Earth, then you will have a different cutoff and you will get a different answer for your perturbation. So ultimately, this higher cutoff dependence should all disappear, but it is there in the sense that you really get the log of KL. Okay, but yeah, in this I'll be happy to discuss this more. Yep. Okay.
Could you say a few words more about the origin of the log?
Yeah, so ultimately, if you have just a massless scalar field in the sitter, it's conformally invariant. And so the power spectrum as a is 1 over k cubed. And so when I integrate my loops, I get an integral d3k 1 over k cubed, and that's a log. And so ultimately, there's no higher divergences. If you just give a massless scalar field, then there will not be any higher divergences, because really you should have some running k over k naught to some ns minus 1. And this is essentially saying if I have a mass or if I have any potential from any slow roll parameter here, will give me a running. And then if the running is red, if I remember correctly, then it will be finite. The answer will be finite in the IR. And in the UV, usually these loop integrals don't go as 1 over k cubed. In the UV, you get extra. So this is really, so an actual loop diagram example would be something like k prime minus q, the 3/2 vectors. No, but just to make it finite, I think. What I'm saying is, if there's a mass to the scalar field, and then that would provide you a cutoff that would make your loop finite. It could also be it's going the wrong way. If it's a blue spectrum, well, I don't remember if it's a red or blue, and maybe that's what you're referring to. If it's a blue spectrum, it could be that it's even more divergent. But then blue spectrum is not generally what you get for single field inflation by itself. Okay. Well, anyway, so it comes in. And when you have k prime, so it's an IR effect because q sets your scale. So this is for z of q square. Okay, so you get this perturbation on q scale. And if k prime is much smaller than q, then you get something like this k prime cube. And this is where you get this log effect. And this will disappear, I think, if you go away from the conformal case. But it's still going to be a huge number. There's also a case that you can think of it in as this is what you're summing your wavelength outside of the horizon, the long wavelength. So this is just like in stochastic inflation. You're adding these up, and they add up to something huge, but finite. This is a stationary solution of the Fokker-Planck equation, essentially. Right? You get large perturbations. They all add up to something that's huge. In fact, in some models, if you calculate the zeta square on really large scale, you will find that it will grow something like h squared over m squared for a model where m squared pi squared. This is the stationary solution for chaotic inflation, say. And this is a huge number. If m was 0, it would be divergent. So these are So they show up, and the reason you have this divergence is because you add up all these modes, and they add up coherently to something that's huge on our scale. But the question is this observable? Because this is all outside of the horizon. These are all modes outside of the horizon. So it's a huge number, but it's all outside of the horizon. Really, it should not be observable, so they should be an effective cutoff.
But they come back in, sorry. Okay. But they do come back in.
That's right. So if you wait a million year, and then we measure the curvature, then the background will have changed. But also, you should include these modes in your loop now. So your cutoff should be changing when you calculate.
Should augment your background solution to include the exit from inflation, then all these observables?
as you said, as they come back in.
Right.
So that's the calculation that you should do.
Well, ultimately, I guess I could say that ultimately you should get something in your log. Maybe that's time dependent, time of observation dependent, because indeed they come back in the horizon.
The confusing thing you're saying is this is a very large number outside the horizon, mm-hmm. and you didn't tell us any particular reason that when it re-enters, it doesn't invalidate your calculations. So you might conclude that without telling us something else, the calculations are all invalid, which people like Woodard have been saying for years. So what's wrong with that?
Right. I don't know. Yeah, I know that's.
Isn't it sort of slow or smooth for two people outside the horizon? Because if there was a big jump right outside the horizon, it wouldn't be true.
Well, what wouldn't be true?
That you could, it would be true that there could be a big shift. Isn't that true? If there was a big jump in potential, it,
No, it is true if there was a huge jump, but I mean the problem here is that if you just have chaotic inflation with M being a hundredth of Hubble, this is huge.
Yeah, this is huge.
So you'd worry that when modes re-enter, you're already invalidated. That must not be true, but why not?
Yeah. No, I think the best argument I know is that you can show, again, and I'm repeating the same thing, we should discuss this more, but is that effectively, when you measure the curvature 2-point, you're measuring against a background value which you need to determine on what's the zero mode. So this is like taking the infinite bucket.
So you're saying the background value would always change in such a way that the results are small and smooth.
At least I can show
it. Or is that your intuition?
No, I can show it. I can right now. I have not been able to show it in every case, so I don't know if it's true. And I think there's some discussion.
In a Taylor expansion, so assuming that everything is relatively smooth.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, you can show it in this delta n from LSM for the exact loops which I was discussing here. But for the loops that, for example, these Q loops, these loops at the quantum level, I don't think hasn't been shown to my satisfaction, okay, and to many other people's satisfaction. That's why there's a lot of papers still being published on this. So this is a very interesting question at this level. But in some cases you can't really show. And again, just to draw it and I'll stop, is that really you say I have some huge box, say, since the universe started, but we're only measuring something here and there's some perturbation in the universe. If we are an underdense region when we measure, then the reason why we're not getting this big answer is because we really only see the background value on this, and that's the background value you should be using, which is smaller than the actual real zero mode in the whole. So the definition of what you take as your zero mode is depends on the size of the box in which you observe.
But if we wait a long time, our box will get bigger.
Yeah, eventually you'll see the real. Yeah.
So I guess what the biggest the log can be is the scale of inflation over the our cosmological constant now. Which is kind of the biggest our box can be.
That's right, that would be, yeah.
So the log is divided by, pick your favorite value of h divided by...
K over h naught today, which for CMB scale, that's about 5. This log, so e to the 5, because CMB, so essentially I take 60 full to be here, CMB scale is about 55, so this is the difference. The cutoff I'm taking is the size of the universe.
If we didn't have a cosmological constant, it could get arbitrarily big in the future.
Right, and it probably is true that in that case you can see these logs on the sky. But,
yeah.
And at some point that would invalidate the solution.
Yes, at some point you need to resum the logs. Yes, indeed, even if I take the cutoff to be the size of the universe today and I look at small scale, log of KL is going to make it the loop, at some point I'm going to have to resum the logs. And that has been discussed as well, resummation, the Sudeikov type resummation of these logs. The point is, I think there's no proof, and I think it is correct, that there's no IR cancellation as in QED. The IR divergences, they're not divergence, but they're huge, and they don't just cancel to zero. That's the main point.
The coefficient, this capital A is in front of the log, that I should take to be a squared over n Planck squared?
For this particular model, yeah, slow roll.
And it doesn't, you say it doesn't re-exponentiate as a normalization group, it doesn't turn into a power, is that the guess?
If the log, no, I think it would. If this whole thing, if you look at k small, high enough, very small scale, and L takes the size of the universe today, then this guy at some point will get a order 1, and then you would need to resum everything. And I think.
Do people think if it resums into a log, is there some DFCFT scaling dimension? It probably isn't. Probably is some
dimension for zeta or something?
Yeah, that's probably not good. The graviton probably right. Not have an anomalous dimension.
I'm not sure exactly what it. Where you resum to a log, but I there's some examples that have been computed explicitly, so I can show you.
I'll show
that. This is an extra scalar field, right? This is not just the tensor modes.
That's right.
You're right. That could have a, in fact, that probably does have an anomaly.
Yeah, and it's actually.
Gravitational anomalous dimension, you're saying. Gravitational anomalous dimension. I mean, it includes directly to interactions.
I mean, in something like DLCFT, even a pre-massive scalar field can have an interesting anomalous dimension. So I don't know if that's the right number to use here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this raises another interesting question, which these calculations have been also for the tensor part. And the tensor is a lot more tricky because I expect the higher divergence to cancel, and the resummation will be zero. You know, if you sum all the logs, it will sum to e to minus log, and it will go to zero.
It's probably closer to this thing that Susskind and his collaborators talk about, where you have a hat, and you actually look at stuff on the sky at the hat. The hat would be our bubble. And this mode would be what they call the Liouville field. Effect of the gravitons outside, and then if you had another massive scalar field, it would be some other operator, and correspond to some other operator in that conformal field theory. The stuff you'd be observing on our sky. So that's probably the right context to sort of interpret these calculations. Mm. And there would be anomalous dimensions, which maybe is what you're computing with.
Yeah.
It's oversimplified, but this divergence just isn't a consequence that this isn't pure de Sitter space, that you need a scalar field that dominates and
harnessed
elements in the Sitter space.
Right, so this is what I'm saying. If it's quasi de Sitter, if it's not exactly a conformal field with massless in de Sitter, then it really is not infinite in some many cases. It's finite. It's huge, but it's finite.
Okay, thank you very much. Yep.